This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Well, we promised on last week's program that we'd try and put something together the night of the election to post Wednesday morning, the day after the election, with every confidence that the election would not be determined by Wednesday morning. I guess we're going to kind of do a snapshot in time here as we watch things evolve. As we speak into the microphone at the moment, Harris has 34 electoral votes and Trump has 168. We expect that to change in the next 20 or 30 minutes. And we'll keep you posted. Is there anything more stale and unuseful than yesterday's news? Nevertheless, as this unfolds, we may be able to find some intelligent things to say about stuff. And I think what I want to do at the beginning of the program here is to use some quotes that we like. We're not huge fans of Joseph Stalin, but we do have to give him credit when he made the statement that those who vote decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything. And I must say, as I'm watching right now, Donald Trump's sprint ahead in the state of Georgia, we had every confidence, based on our many conversations with Greg Palast, that Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger would do everything possible to disenfranchise large numbers of black voters down in Georgia to make sure that the state went red. Is that what's going on right now? Well, maybe. And here's a quote from Benjamin Franklin that we like. Said Ben, "It takes many good deeds to build a good reputation, and only one bad one to lose it." And clearly, Ben lived long before Donald Trump arrived on the scene. How about an old Turkish proverb, which is, "When a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become a king. The palace becomes a circus." And we can't resist taking a shot at Elon Musk. A meme was sent around saying, "Elon Musk did not found Tesla. He did not invent the car. Tesla was founded and built originally by Martin Eberhardt and Mark Tarpening. Elon Musk isn't why SpaceX is successful. The rockets are. The genius designer of those rockets is Tom Mueller. Elon Musk is not a genius, and he invented nothing. Elon is just good at finding opportunities and stealing the credit when he buys his way in." Problem with Elon is he's really rich, and he's throwing millions of dollars to help Donald Trump. As we're watching this unfold tonight, he may have gotten his money's worth. Now, we're sure that no matter what, by the time we finish recording this evening, the results will not be finalized. We will not know who the next president is. At least, comma, we hope so. Because as I'm speaking to you right now, DJT only lacks 102 votes to become the next president. Mr. Mullen points out, the night is still early. Of course, I'm looking up at the screen right now, and I see that in Wisconsin, Trump is ahead with 8% of the vote in. And no, as we contemplate this, I have to confess, we just don't get it. How could a guy who performed so badly as president, who has so disgraced himself by his performance his entire adult life, how is it this guy, and we have a previous Trump administration to base our estimates of what he might do on, how is it this guy, well, first off, is not in an orange jumpsuit behind bars, would be the first question to ask. And of course, that has to do with the failings of our legal system, and let's talk a bit about that. Writing in Slate, Dahlia Lithwick said, "Ever since Donald Trump took over the Republican Party, Democrats and never-Trump conservatives have been calling on the courts and the press to save America. But our glacial legal system has failed to stop Trump from running for a second term, despite four criminal indictments. The mainstream media has produced devastating reporting on Trump's tax and business fraud, grifting, and fondness for Vladimir Putin and other autocrats. But these disqualifying revelations have barely dented Trump's popularity. In an era in which Fox News, the internet, and Trump himself have redefined media and news, the very idea of amassing evidence and putting on proof is now fully antiquated. Fact-checking, smoking guns, and the truth are obsolete. Said Lithwick, Trump is an arcing, sparking, frothing, flaming black hole of disinformation, and millions of his followers believe him when he says that the press lies and the justice system is the deep state. We must face the reality that journalism isn't coming to save us any more than the courts are coming to save us. With Trump on the verge of returning to power, we need to recognize that the moment has come to save ourselves. To which I say, great idea, Dahlia. What do you got in mind? Yeah, I imagine she meant get out and vote, but, you know, we're past that point right now. We've talked on this program, as a few media outlets have, about how demented, how absolutely deranged Donald Trump has been in the past few months. And the sad fact of the matter is the mainstream media has been sane-washing him. Writing in The New Yorker, Dhruvu Kolar said that Trump himself has felt obliged to address his digressive ramblings. I do the weave, he said recently. I'll talk about like 9 different things and they all come back brilliantly together. He added, English professors, they say it's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. Noted the magazine, Joe Biden's deficiencies became apparent in part because he was always behaving like a normal politician. But Trump's conduct has been so aberrant for so long that separating genuine deterioration from routine volatility is no easy task. On what basis does one judge oscillations in something without precedent in public life? In the first half of this year, major U.S. newspapers ran dozens more articles about Biden's mental acuity than they have about Trump's in the past 9 months. In the end, the Democratic leadership prevailed upon Biden to step aside for coalition and country. Republican leaders, confronted with the unraveling of their nominee, have only reaffirmed their fealty. So I think it's worth noting that the problem does not completely go away, even if Trump loses. The Republican Party has morphed into something, well, I don't think evil is too strong a word. Anyway, I should clarify, we've talked in this program on several occasions about the evolution of the Republican Party over the past many decades, and Trump sort of became the poster boy for what they wanted to put forth. I guess you might say a Ronald Reagan without the charisma. And make no mistake, if he goes away, we will be much, much better off because he's the guy they rally behind. Watching some of the polling data unfold today, I observed that people who tend to put the economy as the most important issue tended apparently to lean to Trump. And while I'm no economist, I do subscribe to The Economist, a British publication, and was somewhat startled to note that the special report in the last issue was on the robustness of the American economy, calling it the envy of the world. So how is it? The Republicans out there have gotten the idea that our economy is in bad shape and that we need Donald Trump to ride in and fix it, just like he's fixed everything else that he's touched in the business world over the years. I noted that in many states it appeared that abortion came up at something like 14% of people's main concern, which is depressingly low. If there's anything that clearly delineates these two candidates, it's that issue. I mean, Trump got rid of Roe v. Wade, an excellent Supreme Court decision. He single-handedly got rid of it. I mean, we know of cases where women have died because they were miscarrying, they got septic, they went to the hospital, and the idiot doctors there in whatever red state they were in balked at the idea of doing what they should do to save the woman's life. They might get prosecuted for committing an abortion. So the woman died. That's what we're up against right now. Donald Trump has brought back the back alley abortion, which is where some women are going to go when they're in trouble. They're also talking about Project 2025, stepping up and making sure that the two pills that account for 2/3 of the abortions that take place in America will be banned. They're going to use the Comstock Law from like 1878 to enforce the fact that you can't send pills across state lines. As we watch these election results come in, we should note that apparently down in Georgia, there were bomb threats in every large city in Fulton County, which I believe is a big Democratic county. So who's behind that, do you suppose? The MAGA people or the Russians? Because apparently a lot of election officials across the country are pointing out that they think the Russians have a hand in what's going on in their states. Mr. Mullen raises the issue, what is the difference between the MAGA people and the Russians under Putin? And, well, I don't have an answer for that. And, of course, we know some people who claim that Russiagate is all nonsense. It's all a bunch of deep state efforts to rein in Trump, which is not true. We would, again, refer you to our previous conversation with Craig Unger about his book, American Kompromat, describing how it appears that Russia has something on Trump. It would certainly seem so based on the fact that Donald Trump is not a guy who says nice things about too many people and is really fond of saying nasty things about most people. And one entity which he has never had a bad word to say about is Russia and Vladimir Putin. And what do you know? It could be right here on election night. The Russians are at it again. Speaking of Craig Unger, The Last Word section of the Week magazine in the October 25th issue had two pages discussing reporter Craig Unger's career. This was excerpted from a piece in The Atlantic by Gal Beckerman. I guess I didn't really realize that Craig Unger tried to make a name for himself back in 1980 when he took a look at the October surprise. Now, back in 1980, Jimmy Carter was president, facing a challenge from Ronald Reagan. We've done several shows on this topic of how it was the Republicans sabotaged the return of our American hostages from Iran to help the Reagan campaign. Pretty ugly story. There were two books written about it, one by Gary Sick and one by Barbara Honegger. We had Barbara Honegger on the show at one point many years ago, and we did have Craig Unger on, of course, but not to talk about this. He kind of got the runaround. He went to go cover this October surprise story. And what do you know? The political operatives that didn't want the truth to get out made life rough for him. To quote from the piece in The Atlantic, speaking with me about the October surprise from a leather booth at a Greenwich Village tavern more than three decades later, Unger, now 75, lit up. Uncovering exactly how Republican operatives had improbably and secretly worked out an agreement with Ayatollah Khomeini would give him a chance to be Woodward and Bernstein or Seymour Hersh, journalistic heroes whose crusading investigations he revered. But it would not be Unger's Watergate. It would be his undoing. Within a year, the story was downgraded to a hoax, and Unger was both out of a job at Newsweek and being sued for $10 million. Kind of depressing to realize that was 44 years ago, and it wasn't made up. He was onto something, but it was, quote, downgraded to a hoax, much as they tried to do with Russiagate, with a large amount of success. Anyway, we've all been fearing the election chaos that would take place if Trump loses, and that's a certainty. That is a certainty that there will be lots of trouble if he does not prevail in the Electoral College. Pennsylvania. So, yeah, we've already had bomb threats being called into Democratic voting areas. And it's pretty clear, at least outlined in a piece by David Klepper, writing in the AP, that influencing efforts will continue after the polls close. In the piece, Mr. Klepper notes that despite all the attention on efforts to spread disinformation in the months before the November 5th election, the hours and days immediately after voting ends could offer foreign adversaries like Russia, Iran, and China, or domestic extremist groups, the best chance to mess with America's decision. That's when Americans will go online to see the latest results or share their opinions as the votes are tabulated. And that's when a fuzzy photo or AI-generated video of supposed vote tampering could do its most damage, potentially transforming online outrage into real-world action before authorities have time to investigate the facts. Analysts at this phenomenon are blunter, warning that a particularly effective piece of disinformation could be devastating to public confidence in the election if spread in the hours after the polls close, and if the group behind the campaign knows to target a particularly important swing state or voting bloc. Possible scenarios include out-of-context footage of election workers repurposed to show supposed fraud, a deep fake video of a presidential candidate admitting to cheating, or a robocall directing at non-English speakers warning them not to vote. And who wants to see Donald Trump back in the White House again? Well, Russia, apparently does. Article by Joseph Men, writing in the Washington Post in September, noted that Russia, Iran, and China are using artificial intelligence tools as they increase their efforts to sway the American populace ahead of the November election. U.S. intelligence officials said Moscow especially is set on denigrating Vice President Kamala Harris. Russia has doctored clips of Harris's speeches to replace some of her words, an office of the Director of National Intelligence told the Washington Post, and has used generative AI to create false texts, photos, video, and audio. And, of course, The Intercept noted last month that the Pentagon wants to use AI to create deepfake internet users. Yes, the DOD wants technology so it can fabricate online personas that are indistinguishable from real people. To that, I would say, if we can do it, they can do it. And I'm sure they are doing it. This plan is mentioned in a 76-page wish list by the Department of Defense's Joint Special Operations Command, or JSOC, and outlines advanced technologies desired for the country's most elite clandestine military efforts. An entry reads, Special Operations Forces are interested in technologies that can generate convincing online personas for use on social media platforms, social networking sites, and other online content. The document specifies that the JSOC wants the ability to create online user profiles that appear to be a unique individual that is recognizable as human, but does not exist in the real world. In addition to still images of faked people, the document notes that the solution should include facial and background imagery, facial and background video, and audio layers. And the JSOC hopes to be able to generate selfie video from these fabricated humans. These videos will feature more than fake people. Each deep fake selfie will come with matching fake background to create a virtual environment undetectable by social media algorithms. And if this doesn't scare you, dear listener, well, I don't think you're scarable. Anyway, as we continue to talk into microphones and watch the TV screen in front of us, we now note that at this exact moment in time, Harris has 91 electoral votes, Trump has 201. Oops, correction, that would be 207, leaving him just 63 electoral votes short of what he needs. Calls here in the living room from friends saying, this is not looking good. And, well, no, it isn't. Anyways, we continue to watch this this unfolding spectacle. It looks as though Trump is ahead in Pennsylvania, a state that Harris really does need. And you know one issue that's bound to come up in the postmortems over this election? I guess we'll bring it up right now, is the trans issue. The Wall Street Journal, a publication we don't generally agree with, noted in an editorial that the big sleeper issue in this year's election may be the Democrats' support for transgender athletes competing against girls. In a Gallup poll last year, 69% of Americans agreed that transgender athletes should only be allowed to compete on sport teams that conform with their birth gender. That's not bigotry. That's a matter of fairness and common sense. Most parents feel that it's not right for their daughters to compete against athletes who are born male and therefore enjoy a distinct biological advantage. But progressives have fallen in line with the radical contention of transgender activists that gender is purely subjective and can be flipped like a switch. They note that the issue is becoming a significant factor in many Senate and House races. Vulnerable Democrats like Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, and John Tester of Montana are all under heavy Republican fire for their support for trans athletes in girl sports. And I wasn't aware of this because I don't live in a swing state, but apparently the GOP launched an avalanche of transphobic ads. They evidently spent $77 million in 10 states slamming Democratic lawmakers and candidates over their support for transgender athletes and gender-affirming care for minors. Now, it is true that it is preposterous for Donald Trump to claim falsely that kids are being forced into sex change surgeries during the school day. But I think the plain fact of the matter is that most people, the vast majority of people, don't see the transgender issue as the next frontier in the civil rights movement. Helen Lewis, writing in The Atlantic, notes that many voters have genuine concerns about how far this push for equality should go. They recognize that biological men have an athletic advantage over women in most sports, And there's limited scientific evidence to support gender transitional hormones and surgery for children, to which I would add, to say the least. So could it be that influential LGBT groups have hurt the Democratic efforts here on election night? My guess is yes, although the results are not in yet, I don't think, on the states that had abortion issues, where they were trying to make abortion more legal than it has been in various red states that enacted restrictions on the procedure. And then when it comes to controversial issues in healthcare, we have Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who Trump said he's going to let do whatever the hell he wants, which apparently would include getting rid of the CDC and I think the FDA. Anyway, RFK Jr. is sort of a rival to Trump in terms of being able to skate on his bad behavior. He was recently caught in having an affair with a reporter for New York Magazine, one Olivia Nuzzi. Good old RFK said that he ended their engagement after Nuzzi, a star reporter at New York Magazine, admitted to having what she called a toxic affair with a 70-year-old sex addict. If that wasn't bad enough, Elon Musk, in addition to expecting to make an awful lot of money with government contracts through Donald Trump, is also, by some, considered to be an oligarch in waiting. Just came out recently that Elon Musk was also reaching out to have a correspondence with Russian President Vladimir Putin. They discussed business, geopolitical tensions, and personal topics. In one case, Putin asked Musk to refrain from setting up Starlink, his satellite internet service over Taiwan, in order to oblige Chinese President Xi Jinping. Musk's cozy, secretive relationship with Putin helps explain why the billionaire has promoted a pro-Russia peace plan for Ukraine and why he refused, I did not know this, he refused to give Ukraine access to Starlink for a planned invasion of Russian-occupied Crimea. And then there's Peter Thiel, who apparently, along with Musk, prevailed upon Trump to put J.D. Vance on the ticket. Thiel's Palantir operation is sort of a hush-hush affair, and it is apparently deeply involved in the resistance to Russian forces by the Ukrainians, and has no doubt been successful in stymieing Ukrainian defeat. Who would have imagined 2 years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine, they wouldn't win handily? Anyway, I'm finding this to be a somewhat unsatisfactory narrative for what's going on here. We perhaps shouldn't have tried to do a program live, in essence live, while the election results are coming in. When I look up right now and see that Georgia has 86% of its vote in and Trump's leading 51.2 to 48, well, I am depressed. Right now, if we're going to bet, looks as though Trump's going to return to the White House, the Senate's going to go red, and the House is going to go red. And, of course, the Supreme Court is deeply red. So all the branches of government are now in the hands of the American Fascist Party. Anyway, Ms. McMillan, there's an awful lot of other topics in the world. And I think we probably should just bring this to a close. We're not going to have any definitive answers, I hope, in the next hour. And we'll just have to put it off till tomorrow and next week's program to do a postmortem. And what I guess we could do at this point is do what we have always liked to do in this program. Talk about uplifting topics, science topics, fun topics. We got a few of those laying around. Let's jump ship and go there for our second segment today. What do you say?
I vote yes.
And I would remind our listeners that you're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm your host, Douglas Everett. And working hard to collaborate with us at good old KDVS is our good friend, Guy Tortorisi. Anyway, back in a minute.